You'll see two things in this talk, broadly speaking, things that Lydia talked about and demonstrated to some extent, and some new things that I don't think anybody's ever seen before. I'll try to point out the new things. This is a cooperative effort with many people in the world, but who organized, Brigitte Schmider helped organize observations of TRACE and lots of other observatories. And then the work, the analysis has been done by our staff at APL. The data come from the FLIR-Genesis experiment, which is an 80-centimeter telescope that flew in Antarctica in January 2000 for 17 days. We got vector magnetograms, Dopplergrams, made in the calcium 1 line here, and H-alpha images at actually H-alpha minus 0.8 angstroms. So what you'll see, what I'll be talking about is blue wing H-alpha observations. Half arc second resolution with no distortion by seeing. The balloon was at 120,000 feet. And as I said, an international campaign. Now, we were extremely lucky. I was trying to point the telescope to look at a filament eruption, and because I saw a little thing underneath the filament, and I thought, well, that'll probably trigger the filament eruption. Well, maybe it did, but by the time we got running on it, why, this active region was very rapidly growing, and so we have a particularly interesting sequence of observations of the growth of active region 8844. This is a follower spot, which is negative polarity, and the leader spot, which is positive polarity. And now I'm going to orient most of our pictures this way. So remember that up here is east, and down here is west, with the leading spot here. And we saw a lot of the things that are well known about active regions, but maybe we saw them in more detail. You can see the little dark threads that are associated with little incidences of flux emergence, and they have a wavelength. They have a length of about 3,000 kilometers. And at either end of the threads, why, there's a little magnetic feature. This is the longitudinal magnetogram. And I'd like to point out a little bit of the territory here. There's a big supergranule here. Well, it's not a big supergranule, it's a small one. And there's another supergranule over here and over here. And you'll see that the flux emerged particularly obviously around those supergranules. It says show movie. I use some software that's the NIH image so that I can play with it quite a bit while I show the movie. Let me slow it down a little. Here's about a 3-hour interval of observations. And you can see the sunspots forming and moving into the leading and following sunspots. You can see the little incidences of flux ropes coming up, darkening, and then we'll be looking at some downfall. So this is in the wing of the calcium 6122 line, and there are three general areas of flux emergence here and here and here and there. So it's a picture of flux coming up in the middle of supergranule-like cells. I'm not sure I want to call them supergranule cells, but they have downflows on their edges and upflows through the middle of the cell. Now let's have a look at the magnetic development there. Okay, so now you see the general trend of what's going on. Flux comes up here in this general area, and then you see the positive fields heading this way and negative fields heading that way. That's kind of the general story, but now let's look at the particular story. See if I can make this work, yeah. You'll see material coming in and hitting this supergranule boundary here, very obvious supergranule boundary here. And you'll see material predominantly looking like white polarity heading in this way, and predominantly looking like dark polarity heading this way, and then smashing together here at the supergranule boundary. And we actually did the correlation tracking of the granules, and you get a swoop of material over on the side. It's as though stuff comes up, comes over, it swoops down, and then it wants to make it to that sunspot eventually, and so it's going to take a route around the edge of the mountain there. Well, we track the flows of the magnetic field in two different ways, just by looking at this, and you can see it, and then by looking at the granule motion and doing the cross-correlation, similar to what Tom Berger was talking about yesterday. This is still longitudinal field. And then I want to point out something that's nobody that I'm aware of in the literature has ever remarked on. And if you look at these little bipolar features, there's a couple nice ones right there. They're actually little dipolar things with a positive element leading the negative element, going the opposite to the main direction of the sunspot region. And in fact, you'll see them here and there. In fact, everywhere that you see a little dipolar feature, it's oriented with white polarity up and black polarity down. Whether it's heading into this supergranular boundary from this side or from this side, they're a little harder to find over here, but there are some. They're just not as obvious here. We characterize this region here as more a uniform field area. A lot of the most interesting action with the MMFs, we call them, moving magnetic features, is over here by the following sunspot. Now, moving magnetic features are something that they're usually seen coming out of sunspots, and here we have a couple of examples over here. That's a phenomenon that's well known and generally takes a different pattern. The polarity closest to the sunspot is the same polarity as the sunspot, and the one that's opposite is the one that leads away. But the infalling ones have the negative polarity going into positive spot and so forth. Just to dramatize the supergranule cell, we can run it a little faster. And you can see a lot of the things that's happening, the growth of this spot, and some stuff flowing out of these spots, even though this is a new region, they show this characteristic signature of decay. And then you see a lot of little things happening as the flux emerges here at this cell here, and this cell here, and this bigger cell here. Just to further confuse you, this is the Doppler movie. Let's see. If you run this fast for just a moment, I know it's hard on the eyes, and don't pay attention to the granulation over here, but look at this. Look at this downflow area at the boundary of the supergranule cell. More or less fixed downflow areas here, and there's near the spot, there's a hole that things go down, and there's a couple of holes. There's a long, funny-looking flux rope over here, which we haven't figured out yet, and I'm not going to talk about that. Now let's go a little slower so that we can see. Let's see here. The structure.
Can you outline the supergranule again? The same supergranule?
Right about here. It's outlined by downflows. Downflows are black. Upflows are white. And now let's look at the incidences of flux emergence here. Watch right here, and you'll see a brightening. It's almost like a flare, but remember, this is a Dopplergram, and white means upflow. And so you see an incident, up they come, and then it's over, up it comes.
What velocities are the upflow?
Well, now the velocities, remember, we have a filtergram, and we read out velocities of about half a kilometer per second. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody jumps up and says, if you really had a vector filter graph, a spectrometer, you might get higher velocities. So I think we're confident that we've got at least a half a kilometer per second upflow in these regions. And so, looking more carefully in a long time at these things, you can see incidents. Here, watch this. You see a little dipolar feature in the Doppler movie that shows one or two dark little downflow areas where the stuff's falling down, and right behind it is where it's jumping up. And so these places where it's rising here and showing white patches, those coincide with the dark threads that you see in the continuum. So what's happening is the material's coming up, or the flux rope's coming up, it's getting a little above the photosphere, cooling, and sliding down into something, okay? And that's one of the most exciting things about this, uh-huh?
What in this Doppler ground we don't see a center where flow goes up and then goes to the boundary, it's supposed to be. It looks like white stuff in every way inside this Doppler ground.
You got a number of effects going on here. You've got the Evershed effect. You've got a flow this way out of the sunspot. Then you've got a generally flow in this area, which would be appear to be an upflow. The average here probably looks like an upflow. Now remember, we're looking at this region at about an angle of 30 degrees from vertical, so there can be some distortions here. But I think that the crucial thing that's not distorted is the structure of the upflow events and the flux emergence events. Uh-huh.
What's the intensity of the bipolar that are in the center of the supergrinder as compared to the diffraction of the supergrinder? So is it like, or dynamically good governing?
Oh, okay. I guess the best answer to that is to say that we tracked the little magnetic dipoles, dipolar moving magnetic features, and they move at about the same speed as all the rest of the granules, all the plasma that's there, and so it appears that they are being swept along with the plasma, and I think that's consistent with the proposal that I'll make as to how to interpret them. Okay, I'll get to that in a moment. Let's look at the vector fields for just a moment. Now, I'm not going to show you very many vector magnetograms because they're really complicated, they're hard to figure out, there's a lot of vectors, and they're hard to visualize. But one convenient way of visualizing what's happening in this emerging active region is to look at this. And notice that this whole area here, the whole area where the flux is emerging, is purple. That means that the vector direction everywhere is horizontal, and the horizontal component is like that. So it's very much like what Lydia showed us in that region of Strauss, where the first flux comes up and it's tilted at, say, 60 degrees or something, to the north-south axis, the east-west axis of the active region. And so I want you to think about what's happening in this pool here of horizontal flux. And this is a picture that's very similar to the picture that Bruce Leitz had in his analysis of an emerging flux region. That what you see is a place where the field has come up, and it's just, I suggest, just lying there horizontally and waiting to do something. And what it does is that it pops up and has one of these little dark cooling events, and on the end of that dark cooling event, then you form a stitch. And that's these moving magnetic features. And here's the vector field measurements in five of these moving magnetic features, and they all look really quite alike. They're about an arc second and a half. These are arc second ticks. Here, they're about 2 to 3 arc seconds in dimension, and these are all set to this. I mean, they're all the same scale, so you can see they're very similar. And you have a downward directed magnetic field here, and a somewhat more shallow magnetic field here. And all around on the sides, in that big field of horizontal fields, you've got a continuum of horizontal fields that don't have a dip in them. So what you're looking at here are U-loops, or stitches, dips in the magnetic field where material is draining down. And what's happening just above here and just above here, you see Doppler shifts. I think we can see that on the next. I'm going to skip over this because we're running out of time. But we did plot the magnetic field and the angle of view and the angle of the magnetic field and the velocities. Here's the velocities in the moving magnetic features showing downflow in each pole. And here's the picture I'd like to suggest to you, that what happens is that you get upflow, you get a dark fibril. The wavelength here is about 3,000 to 6,000 kilometers. And you get a downflow of maybe half a kilometer a second. And then this intensifies a bit. You remember, you can't get off of these magnetic field lines. If you've got plasma trapped in this magnetic field line, you can't get off of it very well. The only thing you can do is let it slide toward the sunspot. Take it, sweep it toward the sunspot with the supergranular motions at about a half a kilometer a second. And then when you get there, you can see what would happen. You carry this stitch over there, and it comes over and just pitches in and goes down. And you can see all of that in these movies. You can see the downflow at the edge of the sunspot. You can see the disappearance of this white polarity as it dips into the black polarity sunspot. So what looks like a reconnection event or a convergence event or smacking together event really isn't. It's just a matter of a field line straightening out. So what looked like a white polarity, a positive polarity here, really is just a stitch here that then gets straightened out as it nears the sunspot. And similarly, similar things happen at the boundary of the supergranule cell, where this slides over, and then you get quite a downdraft at the edge of that supergranule cell. Here's a summary of some of the things I've been saying. Look at two of the MMFs. I should use one pointer or the other. So here's an MMF, and another one. And here's the Dopplergram. So you see the downflow, that's the black in the Doppler images. And now I'm going to introduce you to what's going on just above. And just above in the H-alpha, you see an element bomb hanging over each of these MMFs. And that's been known from looking at element bombs associated with MMFs that come out of sunspots. But we found an astonishing correlation between the neutral line, the apparent neutral line in these MMFs, and the element bombs going off. We measured the positions and brightness and so forth of over 600 element bombs that were seen in this region. And we were ideally situated in the wing of the blue line, the blue wing of the H alpha line, to see those. So here's kind of an overlay on the Doppler map of the red and blue polarities of the magnetic field, and the green is the element bomb, and there's a small element bomb going on over this one at the present time there. So element bombs are peculiar energy releases in the low corona. They don't necessarily have a component, I'm sorry, I said low corona, in the chromosphere. They don't necessarily have a component in the corona. But if I have time, we'll see that some of them do. Well, are these element bombs associated with the moving magnetic features, really? Well, if you watch a superposed movie of the element bombs and those moving magnetic features, what you see is the feature moving along and bomb, 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 bomb. And you chase those bombs across the field, and you find that they're moving at the same speed as our little MMFs here, like this. And they also occur in a couple other kinds of locations. This is an important point I want to make. Think of they occur over MMFs. They occur over boundaries of opposite polarities, which I'm not sure I understand exactly how this boundary is constructed right now, but it's a very strong positive-negative boundary here. And we saw repeated bombs happening over there. Here's an outline of one of the bombs here, and here. And this boundary, in the course of the movie, slides in toward the sunspot, and the locus of the element bombs also is sliding upwards and into the sunspot. And then the third type of region was down here, where more or less uniform magnetic field, I should say uniform polarity in a longitudinal magnetogram. And now you can see the position of the bombs sliding with time into the spot. The arrows are the flows, the plasma flows, as indicated by cross-correlating the vector. A bomb is an energy release.
Without
the connection? Well, I'll answer that in a moment.
Okay.
It's about 10 to the 26 ergs of energy release. It takes place in about 10 minutes. And its characteristics are that you can't see it in the center of the H-alpha line, which means that it's underneath the top of the chromosphere. So here's the model that we suggest, where you have an MMF, where you have a converging flow, that is to say, on the boundary of a supergranule. You could be taking the fields and sucking them down and banging them together, and some sort of separatrix, we'll call it, here, and form element bombs here. And that's consistent with a lot of the bombs that we find. Then, the moving magnetic features, you see a flow in one direction, and you'd expect, from continuity considerations, that there would be a faster flow in the chromosphere above, so that you'd get a folding, kind of like a Kelvin Helmholtz instability, and you would be able to form places where you could set off a bomb and get some reconnection. These little black vectors are more or less taken directly from our observations for the direction of the magnetic field there. Then the third case, where bombs are going off in what looks like a uniform positive field. Well, if you look more at the vector fields, what you find is that the magnetic field that you see flowing in there is the vertical component. It's a more vertical field than what's around it. What's around it is a bunch of horizontal field. Remember all that purple. But what's crashing through that horizontal field that's sitting there is a vertical flux rope. And you get, another separatrix. And you get a dramatic series of bombs in front of that. What about these bombs? Manolis Georgiolis measured 593 of them, measured the area, the brightness, the integrated brightness over time, and a number of things. And then we did a calculation of the expected of the radiative losses and of the energy that each bomb required. And we find a distribution like this of number of bombs versus peak radiative loss rate. And so this is 10 to the 25 ergs per second. And I think that some of you will notice this index. The index is important. Now, I have to admit it's sensitive to your assumptions about how you measure the energy in those bombs. But if you have an index of 2 or more, then these can be extrapolated, and you get a lot of energy in the low sizes. And another thing, that why is it a power law? Well, that suggests that what you basically have going on here is something that you can approximate as a turbulent process. You have turbulence going on and creating a little all over the place in these sensitive places where you have a separatrix, and there's lots of opportunities, as you can see, for separatrices in this region. And you're popping off bombs of all sorts of different sizes, and you get a whole bunch of small ones, sub-telescopic ones that we're not seeing, and you get a certain number of big ones. And so what we're going to suggest is that these reconnection events at the magnetic field separatrices can add up and actually heat that active region. We know that emerging flux regions are the brightest thing usually on the disk. And we know that they have a lot of element bombs. They look like this in 171 and Yoko. And once in a while, you see a connection between a bomb as seen in H alpha. See, here's the first H alpha picture I showed you, and it didn't reproduce very well. But the element bombs are these brightenings along here, and there's lots of them, and they wink on and off through the whole movie. And once in a while, one that's in a region, here's an important thing. The ones that are in MMS, or over MMS, where the fields are more or less closed to the upper corona, don't disturb the upper corona. The ones that you can imagine a link along a field line that's open up over here, that is to say the ones that are formed at separatrices where you've got a field that stretches out this way and another field that stretches out this way, when you do that, then you can excite the corona and you can heat one of these corona lines. Okay, so I can either show a brief movie or quit.
Why don't you show a brief
movie? Why don't I show a brief movie? So what's happening? Are the bombs heating the active region and causing the bright loops you see in 171?
Is this a solar physics movie?
A solar physics movie? this is not a simulation. I'm going to run that faster for a minute. What we have here is the negative magnetic fields outlined in black, and the positive magnetic fields, some of them at least, outlined in white. And then we've got the activity from trace in the 171. And we see a number of interesting things. It looks like this black polarity and this white polarity came up together once upon a time and stay connected, and they continue to excite these loops that connect them, and many of those excitations seem to originate here at this place where the white polarities are banging into the dark polarities. Similarly, there's a lot of activity here of white polarity banging into black polarity, something happening, and exciting these loops. And then if you look down here, let me stop this at a certain point. Here's a nice loop excitation, and this coincides here with an element bomb that's in those rather open magnetic fields. So what's our story? Remember how to do this. Magnetic fields emerged as horizontal flux ropes that they developed bipolar moving magnetic features. But I suggest to you that those are just U-loops, just places where they're stitched into the photosphere, and they stream towards spots and supergranular boundaries, persistent downdrafts that shows where the mass goes. The element bombs occurred above them, and they also occurred in a couple of other locations that I described. We think that the element bombs obey a power law that could be extrapolated and lead to heating of the entire active region. They have a fractal index of less than 2, which means that they're clumped together as though it were a process that had to do with generation by turbulence. And so the conclusion is, well, maybe we heat the coronal loops. Thank you.
Okay, lots of questions there. Hameen? The original moving magnetic features are defined as moving upward, right, in the original study. And this one is somehow associated with the proxy meridian. I'm just wondering, are the same thing or is different?
I think they're different. I think that the cartoon that Jack Harvey drew on the original paper about those moving magnetic features is probably right. You've got a flux rope that's here, and it gets tipped over a little bit in the penumbral fibrils and then gets swept away. And so you've got your black and your white polarity
Yeah, right, that's true. For the, that's usually for the, like, playing active reading. You have a lot of moving magnetic feature. You're right in the sense that if you look at active reading, just normal active reading, you don't have that many element bumps. Only in the flux emergence.
And in flux emergence, you got a lot of them.
You consider give a new name there.
What's the relation between element bumps and blinkers or microflares? Are they related?
You could perhaps have a continuum between small flares. I prefer the term small flares and element bombs. But element bombs have this really distinctive characteristic of not, in general, pumping their way above the chromosphere. Most of them are muffled, and it may be that there is a continuum. After all, we're talking about reconnection. So we suggest that bombs are caused by reconnection in the chromosphere, and flares may be small ones at least triggered by reconnection in the chromosphere as well.
Hugh, I just wanted to comment about bombs. I think we've looked at SXT images for bombs and not seen them, although probably that should be done again. In general, if you don't see something in SXT, you're not talking about real heating, right? So I think I'd draw a clear distinction between element bombs and microflares, and I would, since we know that microflares don't heat the corona, maybe element bombs can, but they have to get to a high temperature to do that. So
yeah, and in general, you don't see.
We would. Well, that's not the rule.
Sasha.
Before I ask question, I have a short comment. The power law, in the way you describe the origin, sounds most close to the Poissonian random appears like telephone calls. Power law comes from different reasons, from multiplicative process. So we can talk about it. But the question is, once you have vector magnetograms, it's a time to tell us about something, quiz or whatever. Can you say
That feature that I shied away from does show a lot of twist in it, and we're trying to figure it out there. And if you average over a number of the little MMFs, there's a suggestion of twist in the MMF field, but we're not ready to say about that yet.
Directions, whatever.
I don't know yet.
Eric.
Yeah. What happens after the element bomb is gone off?
They don't care. We looked for some reaction in the magnetic features, and our sensitivity is limited, but we didn't see magnetic features disappearing or anything happening.
If the reconnection was complete, you would imagine that this is no longer being held up. Maybe it would sink a little.
Well, in that cartoon, you could kind of separate off the fields that are you're seeing and dipping into the photosphere from the ones that are actually folded over. In any case, we didn't see any MMFs disappearing in association with any particular element bombs. We might revisit that if we get a chance.
Also, I wondered what the cause of the fragmentation was in the emerging magnetic field. The scale of it. Is it smaller than the scale of granules?
No, it's a little larger. What I think is happening is you come up, and this appears in, well, let's just say in the literature of the theoretical speculations, that you come up and you kind of flatten at the fairly stable zone just above the granulation. Remember the granulation and all that, but just above there, you get a moment of stability. If you're coming up with your flux rope, you can flatten out like this, and then eventually it develops your Rayleigh-Taylor instabilities. And it comes up, and you get your dark threads forming, and you get your downward draining, and you've got a Rayleigh-Taylor instability situation there. And that's what I think is happening.
One last one, Jim.
I think this picture that you and Lydia present is really quite appealing. And I can understand, based on what you said, why the opposite vertical poles of the omega loop should separate. But I wonder a little bit about the motion of the MMF. I mean, those fields in your picture are not deeply rooted. And so I would think if they move, it's because they're being convected with some kind of a convective flow or something. But yet, in your data, it seemed like they moved somewhat independently of what you imagined convection to be.
Not really. Not really. I didn't have time to show you the vectors of flow. And to the extent that we've examined it, they seem to be moving with the plasma flows in the supergranules.
Okay, let's thank David.